Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week I get to say I told you so about the Trump-Kim summit. And, of course, we discuss that royal wedding. Thanks very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms with us this afternoon. And just to, as we begin the program, to remind you, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule in light of the fact that as this is airing on our talk station now, it's almost, well, a little after 11 p.m. his time. And he's had a pretty busy day, I'm confident. We'll get some details on that in a moment. Looking forward to the upcoming conversation. We'll talk wedding. We're talking international issues. And, well, I've got a caller has asked me for a clarification for you, Tom, related to Europe and Palestine. And I'll get that question a little later on, but I wanted to let you know that folks are listening and they're getting questions to me. So I'm looking forward to this response here in just a few moments. But first, Tom, as always, like to start off with the circumstances, conditions, the environment you find yourself in there in London. What's it like?
Well, as always, it's beautiful weather here.
Oh, as always. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Are you with the Chamber of Commerce there, the Tourism Bureau or something of that nature?
No. It really has been a lovely spring. You know, since the sun came out and put its hat on, we've just been dancing through the streets, lots of bear skin on show. It's been very nice.
Okay, and by the way, when he says bear skin, he's talking B-A-R-E, not B-E-A-R. Bear skin.
Yeah,
okay.
Not the sort of bear skins that they wear outside Buckingham Palace.
Okay.
On top of their heads.
Speaking of that, let's talk about that. What an amazing day. And of course, I'm not into weddings. Royal weddings are fine. That's great. But looked like an absolutely phenomenal day. I think it was 70 degrees, gentle breeze, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, gentle breeze, beautiful blue sky. The weather couldn't have been any better, in my opinion. How was it?
Absolutely perfect weather. Absolutely perfect weather. How do you feel about having an American in the royal family?
You know, that's a question we'll offer to the audience. And of course, we're not taking any phone calls on this one, but let me just simply say, we'd be appreciative of hearing your response to that question by simply an email at viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. That's viewpoints with an S, viewpointsradio@hotmail.com. If you will simply send us your remarks and comments or via Facebook at Viewpoints on the Talk Station, Tom and I would appreciate knowing. How do you feel? You know, I personally just took it in stride. It was a beautiful event. I will say this much, Tom. It does, to a large degree, it was pretty obvious based on your comments last week about the role of the royal family. We have a flag, but the Brits, the United Kingdom, have the royal family. And looking at the turnout of people and the excitement and the smiles on the faces, you know, you realize just the emotional, moral influence that institution being the royalty has on the rest of your country.
Well, you know, it actually has a huge impact, I think, on the rest of the world, too.
It does.
We don't have the figures in yet. I mean, we have the figures in for the U.S. Something like 29.2 million people watched it in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have the global figures in yet. But it's probably not too far below the figures of people who watched Kate and William's wedding, which was 3 billion people
Wow.
around the world.
Wow. It was a gorgeous wedding. Everybody, I say that gorgeous in the sense that it was just perfectly choreographed. And the weather was fantastic. moving on to other items here in just a moment, but I am curious. I'm going to talk briefly about the sermon as well. The fallout, the residual impact of the wedding is the United Kingdom, London, all those communities, are they still feeling the glow, if you will?
Yes, I think they are. There's still a definitely after-wedding glow spreading throughout the country. And it just makes people feel happy. Weddings generally make people mm-hmm. feel happy. Like births,
well,
you know, it's just a continuation that people like of humanity. And I think, you know, we've still got a few more days to
enjoy,
eke out a little bit of happiness from this one.
I think it was a great day, and the bride was beautiful, and as far as the, you know, all, and there's been a lot made about the factors involved with this, of course, the bride of mixed racial heritage, being an American, obviously, as a result, if you will, describing non-royalty as a commoner, but also her experience, her background, both in professionally in the work her work with TV and broadcast area. Also, fascinating story about her personality as a youngster who had written a letter to Procter & Gamble and even gotten Procter & Gamble to change a commercial as a 12-year-old, a very strong-willed individual, but really very attractive in so many ways. I think that it strengthened that brotherly relationship we have with the United Kingdom. I'll use the word brotherly rather than cousin.
Go ahead. There were a lot of American flags out, as well as Union Jacks.
Wow. Well, that's impressive. And, of course, maybe this will improve the relations between the U.S. and Great Britain, particularly maybe the relations with the Prime Minister Theresa May and President Donald Trump. I say that tongue-in-cheek. Let's move on to the sermon very quickly. How was that received? Here in the States, it was perceived as being a little long. But
he was supposed to have 6 minutes. He took 14.
Yeah, well,
I think the sort of mixed. I'm a traditionalist, you know, and he was obviously more evangelical in his approach. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to the same church school as you did, and I don't think Father Owens preached anything like that.
Well, it's quite an interesting background, and of course the presiding bishop, and of course I assume you know, Tom, he has North Carolina roots. He was bishop here in North Carolina as well. So quite a step for North Carolina.
Apparently he was a great hit with the Queen.
Oh,
the Queen is a very, very staunch Christian,
mm-hmm.
and was a close friend of. I can't remember his name. He's just died. Billy Graham.
Right. Yeah.
He was a very close friend of Billy Graham. And so she was very much an evangelical type Christian, even though she was traditionalist in the churches that she went to. And she loved him, apparently. She thought he was great.
And by the way, admired him when she says loved him. I just want to make clarification on that. Yes, she did. And it is impressive that, again, that North Carolina connection to the United Kingdom. And, of course, it's further strengthened by our weekly conversations with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're here with Viewpoints Around the World. We in North Carolina, he in London. But to give further acknowledgement, he is an expat. So he is has a definite strong U.S. relations as well. Tom, I'm going to move on to a few other items. But just quick note, how was the wedding received in the other European communities in the press? Because it's something you can look at and actually see at the end of the day. How was it? Were the papers just littered with photographs, and did pretty much all the other news around the world sort of fall off the front page, both there
and
the UK?
Absolutely. And they all had special supplements and everything else. You know, it's, you know, as I said, the British royal family is like, I don't know, they've sort of taken on the role of royal family to the world in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So when they have some type of wedding or birth, it is big news everywhere.
And by the way, how did you ask the question? I'm going to close with this question before we go to the break. How does the United Kingdom, how do the Brits take to Ms. Markle? Well, now Her Royal Highness.
Oh, very well. You know, I mean, it's, you know, there, obviously there's been a few people who have made comments on Twitter about her mixed race heritage.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, I'd say they love her. You know, she's attractive. She's charismatic. A lot of people are saying she could be another Diana.
Okay, the issue that she was not of a royal background, does that matter anymore?
No, that doesn't matter anymore. I mean, Kate Middleton is not of royal background.
That's true. That's true. Okay, we're talking with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, here on Viewpoints Around the World. Stay tuned. More detailed information coming up here in a few moments related to issues around the world. We're going to talk, interestingly enough, about FBI infiltration of the Trump campaign and, of course, North Korea and a few other items. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We were just chatting about the events there in the United Kingdom with the wedding this past weekend. Now let's move to the States here for a few minutes. The FBI infiltration of the Trump campaign, how is that being covered in the UK and, if you will, other European media there?
Well, it's being covered very, very fully. And, of course, it's interesting to note that we have another connection with Cambridge and another connection with the UK, and that the alleged infiltrator is a Cambridge professor, emeritus mm-hmm. professor, an American who's been at Cambridge since 2001. And he studied at Oxford as well. So we've, you know, all these connections between Britain and the FBI and MI6, because we also have the Steele dossier, which was mm-hmm. supposed to be by an MI6 agent. And it's all very interesting.
Now, amidst all this,
and Cambridge Analytica, of course, as well.
Right. Cambridge Analytica. The other question I have for you, Tom, in light of the fact that there is some question, sincere questions now, about the concept of a deep state, and that, of course, is a group within the federal government that basically is freelancing, if you will, with no significant public oversight. Does that have any sense of concern there that it could happen in the United Kingdom or in other countries in Europe?
No, I don't think that's really been raised here. I mean, we've always had an establishment,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, people have always recognized its existence. There's a television program going on at the moment about a party leader called Jeremy Thorpe, who conspired, it's generally accepted now, they conspired to murder someone who was blackmailing him because he was a homosexual. And he got off. And basically, he probably got off because he was a key member of the establishment. Mm-hmm. Now, this was back in the 60s and the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he would be quite so successful now, I don't know. But there's always been a sort of establishment which is sort of skirted above the law, if you like, a deep state.
Right. Even in European communities, there is a sense of tension between the establishment and, other agencies that may or may not exist. I was just curious about that. Let's move on to another item associated with events in the U.S. I want to touch on this one very early so that we can move on to items broadly. But the Santa Fe shooting, and of course, I'm pretty confident it did get coverage. Of course, that unfortunately happened a day before the wedding. So in many regards, I say unfortunate. It was at its outset just an unfortunate issue. But let's talk about the Santa Fe shooting. Much coverage there in the United Kingdom and the European community.
Yeah, it did get coverage. Not as much. I don't think it was because of the wedding. I think in a way people are becoming inured to the mass shootings at American high schools. It's not big news anymore.
That's sad.
And
in
that,
some,
that is very sad.
It is. It is. And of course, the event itself was sad. And we're not going to get into, you and I have debated this topic on numerous occasions. But I think your observation a moment ago is really a little disheartening and should be for us here in the States, that this sort of item is perceived now, for want of a better description, as, well, not that unusual.
Yeah, normal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are more mass shootings in America than any other country in the world.
Mm-hmm. Other than in a war zone community, a war zone environment. I'm not going to argue that case with you this afternoon, Tom, because it is just a very sad story. The other aspect, and then continuing on with our conversations about what's happening here in the States for a few more minutes with you, Tom, and again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, the stories associated with North Korea, the announcement yesterday that, in fact, the anticipated June 12th summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un may not be happening. Again, amidst all of the celebratory environment there of the United Kingdom, and I would argue even in the European community, what kind of coverage, what kind of notice is that being given?
That's been given a lot of coverage. I went and read De Welt on the subject because I thought they might have something interesting to say, and they did. And basically, it was several fold. One was a sort of "I told you so," because De Welt was leading the way. The Germans were leading the way and saying, "Really, you know, we don't think there's any grounds for an agreement. There's going to have to be some big concessions made by everyone, and also that." A criticism of Trump that he allowed expectations to be raised to an unreasonable level.
Really? No one here seems to have that feeling that he raised expectations, because he said all along, if there was no real concrete action, and he keeps pushing the issue of denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and we all recognize that is worth a lot of definitions. You can't really specific. We're not going to, of course. Here in the States, none of us got the impression that it was raising expectations. I'm fascinated that other communities.
Well, I think people over here were of the opinion that he was being a bit too fast in rushing into this summit. That he hadn't prepared the ground.
And that there were criticisms of that. Here, even in among his own cabinet, there were concerns. But his attitude was, as is a typical businessman, we're going in, we're going to do business, and we're going to accomplish things. But he also was pretty blunt about that, saying without concrete action, he was prepared to walk. In many regards, this does deflect any concerns of him having to walk. But who knows? The summit is still up in the air, as we understand it here. Is that how you see it there in the European community?
Well, yes, it's up in the air, but less likely to happen is how it's seen.
You know, one of the issues, and this is going to segue over into another topic here in a few moments with you, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. John Bolton's remarks about Libya, that was apparently something that made the North Koreans a little uncomfortable. Is there any feeling about his remarks? And this, of course, will segue nicely into a conversation about Iran here in a few moments. But any feeling about his remarks on that?
Yeah, basically, people in Europe thought that he made a mistake.
Okay. I would have anticipated that. All right, we're going to get to this and more in just a moment here with Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We have a lot of topics to discuss here in a few moments. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. It is so satisfying to say, "I told you so." It is also very annoying. It is, however, one of my life goals to be as annoying as possible to President Donald Trump and his misguided followers. Being honest, however, I must admit that I am voicing the four-word admonition early in the Korean diplomatic ballet. This leaves me vulnerable to a devastating return volley of I told you so's from the legion of Trump supporters. Well, I'm willing to risk it. It's no surprise that the Trump-Kim summit scheduled for Singapore in June is likely to be postponed indefinitely. The White House is trying to rescue it. They may succeed. It is unlikely. The proposed summit was a poorly executed rush job. It raised unreasonable expectations for the American and world public. Its probable failure, however, may have saved the Nobel Peace Prize Committee from a difficult and embarrassing decision. There are several reasons for the probable indefinite postponement. Lack of input from professional American diplomats, administration job changes, U.S. withdrawal from the Iran nuclear accord, lack of pre-summit diplomacy, diplomatic semantics, continuing U.S.-South Korea military maneuvers, and the personalities involved. Staffing levels at the U.S. State Department have been cut by almost a third. Many of its senior posts remain unfilled. It is only this week, 16 months after his inauguration, that Donald Trump has nominated someone to fill the important post of ambassador to South Korea. Yet another military man, Admiral Harry Harris, commander of the U.S. forces in the Pacific, has been chosen for the job. Admiral Harris was originally destined for Canberra as the U.S. ambassador to Australia. The newly appointed Secretary of State Mike Pompeo diverted him to Seoul, much to the annoyance of the Australians, who are angry that they are still without a top U.S. diplomatic representative. Of course, one of the reasons for delays everywhere is the revolving White House door. Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson had earmarked a top foreign policy academic, Dr. Victor Chaw, for the post in Seoul, but Dr. Chaw failed the Trump test when he told the president that he would not support an attack on North Korea. Chaw, and not long afterwards, Tillerson, were out the door. Admiral Harris is a strong proponent of what is called sustained forward American presence in the Asian region. This means keeping troops in South Korea and Japan and strong military ties with Taiwan. This conflicts with the goals of both North Korea and its Chinese back. Beijing wants the summit to be the beginning of the end of the American military presence in Asia. It then wants to fill the vacuum left by American withdrawal. Pyongyang wants international guarantees, especially American, that the hereditary communist dictatorship of the Kim family will be protected. To this end, Kim Jong-un is prepared to use his nuclear toys as a bargaining chip. He is prepared to give them up in return for aid, trade, and sovereignty guarantees. But he argues that any American guarantees are worthless unless they are accompanied by the withdrawal of the American nuclear umbrella and U.S. ground forces in South Korea. For Kim, the term denuclearization refers to the entire Korean Peninsula and beyond. To Trump, it refers to North Korea. This gap might have been bridgeable if the Trump administration had a credible foreign policy reputation. Unfortunately, it does not. The decision to pull out of the Iran nuclear accord has left Pyongyang and Beijing doubtful that the former wheeler-dealer property mogul will keep his word. Hawkish National Security Advisor John Bolton reinforced Pyongyang's fears when he recently said that the U.S. could follow the Libyan model. Dictator Muammar Gaddafi reluctantly abandoned his nuclear weapons program in return for American protection. But when the Arab Spring arrived, Gaddafi was overthrown and murdered with Western support. Bolton has also gone on record advocating a preemptive strike against North Korea. Pyongyang has responded with another verbal volley and a threat to back out of the summit. Trump says, "No, no, that's not what Bolton meant." I say, "I told you so."
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I want to chat with you a quick item about Iran and the question of, I mentioned a moment ago, John Bolton's remarks associated with Libya and, of course, the concerns with Iran and the continuing threat of tariffs and the end of negotiated arrangements with Iran. How is that being covered in the UK at this point?
It's still being covered. Macron, I don't know if you know it, he is off to Moscow tomorrow, the French president, to meet with President Putin. Macron is making a sort of last-ditch effort to save the Iran nuclear accord. He's hoping that, Putin can use his influence on Iran, because Moscow at the moment is practically allied with Iran in Syria, to get them to agree to some concessions on their activities in Syria and Lebanon, and also to agree to restrictions on ballistic missiles. He doesn't hold out much hope. Nobody holds out much hope. It's a last-ditch effort. And, of course, there's no guarantee, even if he does get some concessions, that Trump would go along with them.
And, of course, the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, has been pretty explicit about the concerns associated with Iran and demands. I'll use that word, demands. With that said, and I want to move on to a few other items, is there a sense in the European community that there is probably no way that the negotiated settlement with Iran can be resurrected?
I think that's probably right.
All right.
I think that people have written off the Iran nuclear accord, and to a certain degree, they've written off Donald Trump.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to another item associated with the president. And this will actually segue also into a question from a caller. Since Israel was recognized, or pardon me, the embassy in Israel was moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and of course there was the reaction there among the Palestinians on the border, what has been the events there in the Middle East, and what has been the coverage? Has obviously, again, the wedding pretty much consumed all the oxygen in the room, if you will, but we've not seen a great deal of news coming out of Israel as a result, or since that initial week of the move of the embassy, the U.S. embassy.
Now, of course, you always, something happens a long way away, you're always just going to get the highlights of
right.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since then, there has been a demonstration by Arabs living in Haifa. Haifa has a large Arab population. As a result of that demonstration, one of a prominent Israeli Arab activist was allegedly badly beaten by Israeli police forces.
Mm-hmm.
And the EU has demanded an investigation into this.
Wow.
As part of that demonstration, also the local member or local director of Human Rights Watch is now being deported. His name is Omar Shakir. And the EU, again, has demanded that he not be deported. One of the Israeli ministers responded to the EU demands by saying the EU can go to 1,000 hells as far as we're concerned.
Okay.
Well, so the other thing is, wow. It's in New York. The UN Security Council is holding a series of closed sessions to consider a Kuwaiti proposal that the UN send a protection force to Gaza to protect Palestinians.
Wow.
This probably won't amount to anything because the Trump administration will almost certainly veto it. It's interesting, though, that Britain and France are not likely to go along, or may not go along, with the American veto.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the Palestinian Authority, since the Gaza riots, has approached the International Criminal Court and asked them to look into alleged Israeli war crimes.
Yeah, that story was, I saw that story earlier today, or late last evening and earlier today.
Yeah.
This leads to a question from one of our listeners. And he is, he challenged me. He said, last week I touched on the topic of the European community reaching out to the Palestinians, assisting them, possibly working with some means of, if you will, dampening the reaction to the move of the embassy from Tel Aviv, that's the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And of course, you've got other countries that have done the same things. As a matter of fact, earlier this week, I interviewed a local resident who was in Jerusalem for the opening of the embassy there, Tom. Very interesting. But my caller said that I did not hold you to the ground on this one. Just what is the European community's efforts to assist the Palestinians to, in some way, ameliorate this problem? It's just an embassy move. So what about the European community? What is happening there?
It's much more than an embassy move. Jerusalem is claimed by both Israel mm-hmm. and the Palestinians as the capital of their respective countries. If you say that, no, it is going to be recognized only as the capital of Israel, then you rule out the possibility of the two-state solution. And the two-state solution is the one that has been on the table for so long. Now, that is playing right into the hands of Netanyahu, who has himself ruled out the two-state solution. Right. He says two-state solution, as far as he's concerned, is dead.
What about the European community? What role is the European community playing in communicating with the Palestinians? And, of course, they have they're having challenges both in leadership and predominantly in their economy. So where is the European community in this?
Well, the European community is very much in favor of the two-state solution. Having said that, they have always taken a back seat to the United States in any of the Arab-Israeli talks. They've left it to the U.S. to try and act as the honest broker. Now, they're getting in a position where now they don't really trust the United States, just like the Palestinians don't, mm-hmm. to be the honest broker. As Donald Tusk recently said, Donald Trump has taught us a lesson, and that is, if you want help, the place to find it is at the end of your arm, if you want a helping hand.
Okay.
That we're not going to get a helping hand from Washington anymore.
That's very interesting. Well, we'll leave it at that. I want to move to a few other items with you before we go to our next break. And we've got several things we want to chat with you about. Venezuela sanctions, the Ebola in the Congo. I think it's a big story. And then Sweden issuing a pamphlet. First, let's talk about, since we mentioned Palestine and sanctions and Iran, what about the Venezuelan sanctions? What influence is that having on the European community, and how do they perceive the events in Venezuela?
Well, for that, I turned to the Spanish newspaper El País.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the elections as much as the sanctions. Of course, the sanctions will continue as a result of these elections. And according to El País, in their opinion, as a result of the elections, Nicolas Maduro is weaker than ever before.
Yeah, but will that improve the economy? Venezuelans are leaving the country in droves.
They're voting, but they're voting with their feet, but they're also voting, according to El País, with their indifference.
Okay.
And they think it's significant that only 46% of the people voted in the election.
But do they think that, because this is important for the world economy, the Venezuelan oil fields are important to the world, is there a feeling that in the European community that we're near a decision, a conclusion to the Venezuela problem?
No, it's only just starting.
Ah, I think you're right on that. Let's move on to a few other items here. Speaking of problems, Ebola in the Congo, and is there concern there that this could spread quickly, not only in Africa, but possibly to other countries of the world?
Well, yes. And of course, the last time we did have the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, we did have some cases spread to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They were very quickly contained, but over 11,300 people died in mm-hmm. West Africa. In the last outbreak. Ebola actually was first discovered in Congo.
Right.
So it's in a way not surprising that if there was going to be another outbreak, it would be in Congo. So far, I think it's only 28 people who've died.
Yeah, but there
I
is.
I say only, you know,
but,
I mean, you know.
There's
28, it's pretty bad.
There's very serious concern, yeah.
And there's very serious concern that it will spread very quickly. Congo is a very unstable part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it more likely that it will spread.
Right.
At the moment, they are distributing vaccines. They're developed by a pharmaceutical company called Merck.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an American company.
It is. All right. But I just real quick, is there a sense that maybe portions or all of Africa might be quarantined?
Not yet.
Okay.
It's all in a city called Mbandaka at mm-hmm. the moment.
Right.
Which is a trading hub on the Congo River.
Which is a very
But it has very close links with the capital, Kinshasa.
Right. It has.
And so if it spreads there, we've got problems.
Okay. It's something we're going to be paying close attention to. We've got about a minute and a half. I want to chat briefly about Sweden issuing a pamphlet on how to prepare for war. Why?
Absolutely. Well, because they are really worried about Russia. They are seriously worried about Russia. They've been taking a lead in criticizing Russia's cyber attacks. The Russians themselves have been conducting overflights over Swedish waters and Swedish airspace. The Swedes have close link with the Baltic states, Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia. And this is the first time since 1991 that they've put out this pamphlet. Sweden, you know, it hasn't been in a war for more than 200 years.
Mm-hmm.
It is actively neutral.
Right.
But it is armed to the teeth. They are reintroducing conscription. They're talking about possibly joining NATO. They are very, very concerned about Russia.
That is fascinating. And again, story that we are not hearing all the benefit. One of the reasons why I enjoy our conversations, weekly conversations with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World. After this break, we're going to come back with, an issue associated with Facebook. And then an Australian restaurant is distributing guns to diners. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we're going to wrap it up with an issue that really caught my attention. An Australian restaurant distributing guns to diners. Okay, but before we get to that, let's talk about Mr. Zuckerberg. I've read with interest. He is not getting a very good press there and very good political relations with the European community, but particularly with the European Parliament. What's going on there?
Oh, they don't like him at all. I mean, his testimony before the European Parliament was, as I put it, the dampest of damp squibs. Now, this was partly the Parliament's fault. The format that they worked out with Facebook was pretty awful. You know, when he appeared before Congress, the congressman would ask him a question, and he would answer it. Then the next congressman would ask him a question, and so forth and so on. What they did at Strasbourg, which is where the European Parliament is based, is that all the members of the European Parliament, what they call MEPs, they all, one after another, asked the questions without allowing Zuckerberg to answer them.
Hmm.
And they gave him half an hour to answer all the questions that they had posed over the previous 2 hours.
Okay. Yeah.
And so he just cherry-picked the answers.
Uh-huh.
Or he cherry-picked the questions that he wanted to answer.
Right, yeah.
And it made both the European Parliament and Zuckerberg look pretty foolish.
Is there a potential, and I want to move on to other items, but is there a potential, Tom, that Facebook will receive some sort of, restrictions, legal restrictions in the European community? And I don't know how it would happen, but is there some concern associated with that?
Well, how it would happen would be that this week, the end of this week on Friday, what's called the GDPR, or the General Data Protection Regulation, goes in effect across Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And this basically says that everyone has to opt into receiving emails, that you have to have access to all the data that any company might have on you. You can demand that they delete any data. And all the digital companies have to keep your data safe. If they don't, they can be subject to either a $20 million fine or 4% of their global turnover, which is greater, whichever is greater.
I can tell you, in case of Facebook And Zuckerberg, the latter will
That's
be greater.
Billions.
Yeah, it's billions, yes. We'll be paying close attention to this one as it moves forward. Tom, let's wrap it up with an Australian restaurant and guns. Australia was taking back everyone's guns. What am I to understand from this story?
They're water guns.
Oh, okay. End of conversation.
It's a seaside restaurant in Perth called Three Sheets. And they're being plagued with seagulls. And so the restaurant owner, a chap called Toby Evans, has issued water guns to all his diners so that they can shoot at the seagulls and chase them away.
Now, you know, that is so weak. They could do so much better with larger ammunition, you know?
Well, then they might miss and, you know.
I don't think they would miss. No, I don't think they would miss. The name of the restaurant again is?
Three Sheets.
Three Sheets. Where in Australia?
In Perth.
Perth, Australia. All right. And they're having problems with seagulls. Well, we can appreciate that here in coastal North Carolina. We do understand the problems. All right, Tom, as always, do appreciate your time this afternoon, this evening. This portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule, which now almost midnight his time, I'm sure, is sound asleep. Tom, good evening to you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.